Hi, this is Austin Hill. Hey, thanks for checking out this podcast from Austin Hill in the Morning. Now you can hear our program live weekday morning, 6 till 8 Central Time. There are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows. They're available online. Our web address, of course, myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Start your day connecting faith to life. It's Austin Hill in the Morning.
Hey, good morning. Welcome to a Tuesday underway from the Faith Radio Network, and I am Austin Hill. Honored to have you with us. I'm here weekday morning, 6 till 8 Central Time, as we seek to be informative, challenging, hopeful, and helpful here at the start of your day. Better securing one's marriage. Securing a marriage from what? Well, how about temptations from third parties, so to speak? Yes, well, tackle the difficult issue of adulterous affairs coming up in about half an hour from now. Our great friend Dr. Linda Mental, the relationship doctor, as we like to call her, she's got a new book out. It's called We Need to Talk, and she engenders talks, thoughtful discussion on all kinds of difficult issues, and she addresses them gracefully, tactfully, but forthrightly as well. So we'll talk about securing our marriages more effectively coming up in about half an hour from now. Stand by for that. Pastor Saeed Abedini, you've heard of him before. He is an American. He is a Christian. He is still officially a pastor at Calvary Chapel Church in Boise, Idaho. Unfortunately, for almost 3 years now, he has not seen his wife, he's not seen his two small children, and he most certainly has not seen any of the parishioners that he serves at Calvary Chapel of Boise, Idaho. He's been held illegally in a prison in Iran. And what's interesting about this right now, of course, if you were just listening to the newscast from our network news provider, SRN News, there is some sort of negotiation going on. We don't know the details. It's mostly going on behind closed doors. But President Obama says that he will change the course of America, a course that has been in place with Iran since 1979. President Obama is saying that he will secure a nuclear weapons deal that will give to Iran certain privileges that they don't currently have under international regulations, but will ensure that they don't obtain nuclear weapons. The UK opposes this, France opposes this, Germany opposes this, Canada opposes this. But President Obama is sure that he's got the right idea. So in the midst of this, there's this debate going on, a negotiation, if you will, between the United States and Iran. And one of our own Americans, one of our own fellow Christians, is being held against his will and against international law, quite frankly, in Iranian prison. Whatever comes of this this treaty deal, and as SRN News reported just a few moments ago, the deadline for this is supposed to be Tuesday night in Tehran, the capital city of Iran, which I'm not exactly sure how many hours ahead of us they are, but the deadline is looming, and we may very well see some movement on behalf of a release, perhaps, of Pastor Saeed Abedini in the midst of the negotiations. This is to say that, and I've believed this for a couple of years now, Pastor Saeed is sort of a bargaining chip, a negotiating chip between the U.S. and Iran, and that we've just kind of been letting him languish there while something, at least in the minds of the administration, something far more important is being negotiated, a treaty deal. But that said, coming up at about 7:35 Central Time this morning, Tiffany Barons, she is the International Legal Director for the ACLJ, the American Center for Law and Justice. That's a nonprofit law firm that has been representing the Abedini family and involved in their own negotiations on behalf of the Abedini family to get the pastor back home. Tiffany Barons joins us with a view from how things appear from the Abedini's vantage point. And she'll say, well, there's certainly things that she cannot say, and we recognize that, and if she needs to answer some of my questions by saying I can't comment on that right now, I'll understand that, because this is a very high-stakes thing, internationally speaking. But Tiffany Barons joins us coming up later this morning. Now, when we return, you may have seen or heard something about this. Our network news provider, SRN News, has done, I think, a very, very good job covering this. But there is a new law that just was signed into law by the governor of the state of Indiana. It is characterized as a religious liberty law. And my goodness, you would think that the sky is falling in the midst of this. It certainly touched off a lot of controversy. We'll tell you about the religious liberty law for businesses. Businesses owned and operated by Christians specifically, but others as well, in the state of Indiana. And we'll speak to an economist who knows very well about what's going on. We'll get some expert opinion on it when we come back. It's now 9 minutes past the hour. This is the Austin Hill in the Morning program.
News you can use. Connecting faith to life. It's Austin Hill in the Morning.
It's now 10 minutes past the hour. Good morning. And thank you for listening to the Faith Radio Network. Thank you for your support. We are fully listener supported. We need your support. Come on board anytime at myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com. Well, as you may have heard, the governor of the state of Indiana recently signed into law a bill that seeks to provide legal protections to business owners, small business owners especially, who for religious reasons choose not to do business or perform certain kinds of tasks for other prospective customers. Of course, this has come up in the midst of an environment where we have a 70-year-old flower shop owner out in the state of Washington who, there's news out about her today, by the way. She is now being threatened with the seizure of her flower shop by the government of Washington simply because she declined to provide flowers to a gay wedding service. That's the environment in which this Indiana law has come about. It's a tough one to call. Interestingly enough, there is plenty of reason to believe that this new law in the state of Indiana is almost an exact mirror of a federal law that President Bill Clinton signed back in 1993 that he and his own political party supported back some 20, 21 years ago. But nonetheless, this is deemed very, very controversial. Is this a way, or I should say, is there a way out of this constant infighting without individual groups and certain categories of people closing themselves off and cutting themselves off and being hostile to other categories of individuals and saying, I won't do business with you and I'm not going to do business over there either. Joining us for some thoughts on this from an economic vantage point, Dr. Pete Crabb. He is a professor of economics way out there in the Mountain West region of our country. He's at Northwest Nazarene University in the state of Idaho. He joins us on our guest line for some economic analysis and some theological analysis as well. Dr. Crabb, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Boy, it is an early morning for you. You're an early morning kind of guy, I guess.
I do like it.
Good. Well, listen, you've seen the news out of Indiana. What's going on here as you see it?
Well, it's interesting that groups are seeking government help for what the free market and the marketplace itself in general can actually serve them well. It appears that some groups are opposed to any kind of rules that might give businesses freedom to choose who they sell to or who they hire and those kind of facts. It's a reactionary action on their part to what the marketplace can actually fix itself.
It seems to me, Dr. Crabb, this is in no small part what's going on in Indiana, a reaction to the scenarios like the one that I'm sure you're very familiar with in the nearby state of Washington, nearby where you're at, with a flower shop owner that declined to provide flowers to a same-sex wedding, and now she's got the state government after her and any of a number of other people. That seems like overreach as well. What are your thoughts?
Exactly. The flower shop owner, or I believe it was a photographer in another case, that chose not to sell to, essentially not to offer their services to a segment of a society that they disagree with on an issue, those companies, those businesses, are essentially imposing a cost on themselves that others wouldn't necessarily have. And so advocates of this segment of society, this group that wants these special privileges or wants to avoid laws that restrict those privileges, whatever it might be,
right.
They should really allow that. They shouldn't chase after this flower shop owner, or they shouldn't chase after this photographer and say that and force them to sell to them, because those businesses are essentially pulling away from demand in their markets. They're saying, no, we don't want to serve that segment of the market. And so that's a cost to them. Whenever the market is smaller, whenever you restrict the market, then it's more costly for businesses to serve that market. And so these individual businesses are taking it upon themselves. We shouldn't say, and therefore say, you know, the government shouldn't say, no, we don't want you to incur those costs. You know, we're going to force you to sell to these people that you don't want to sell to. And it's just, it's funny that the advocates for this segment of society, they don't realize that the free market would actually help them.
It certainly helped them in terms of producing revenue, which one presupposes,
right.
I guess, is the goal of a business, right? At the same time, there are Christian business owners and Christian organizations that for moral reasons feel as though it would be inappropriate for them to participate in a same-sex wedding, whether it's providing
right.
flowers, providing photographic services, or what have you. And you're teaching in, I would say, a fairly theologically conservative university, Northwest Nazarene University.
Yes.
These issues come up. I mean, the culture would define this as discrimination to not provide services or products to a sector of the society. How do you address this in the classroom when these issues arise?
Yeah, well, we address it in a couple ways. The first way to address it is, and it's the same description that I just gave, that if you choose not to serve this segment of society, that you're imposing a cost on your own business. And that's what our faith requires of us. There's many times as Christians that we're going to pay the price for following Jesus. And he said it's going to cost us. And as business owners, we're to run into that, not just with this group, but those who want same-sex weddings and so forth. We're gonna face a cost of following Jesus and sticking to our faith and our beliefs many times over. So mm-hmm. we address it that way. But we secondly address it that we also don't expect the government to protect us from our own decisions. And we don't want the government to say we have to sell to this group. We don't want the government to say we have to sell to a dictator in another country, or that we have to sell to you know, certain products that we don't want to sell. Maybe it's guns we don't want to sell, you know, as an example. So, you know, if we go down this road and say, oh yeah, the government should step in here and the government should say, you have to sell to these people or you can't deny services to these people, then we should expect the government to step in and say, well, you're going to have to sell this, you're going to have to sell that, and sell any other product that we don't agree with. So we don't want to go down that road.
Sure. Dr. Pete Crabb, professor of economics and finance at Northwest Nazarene University in the state of Idaho.
Yes.
He's on our guest line here on the Austin Hill in the Morning program. I'm still stuck in this conundrum, just me personally, and I suspect a lot of our listeners are, Dr. Crabb, and that is the conundrum where you say, on the one hand, okay, I don't think any business owner should be forced by the power of government to sell their product or service or transact with any one individual
right.
or any one individual group. At the same time, I don't like the idea of singling out certain categories of people in our otherwise free society and saying it's okay for you to be rejected at the, I don't know, at the restaurant or the flower shop or whatever it is. There's a tension between these two. How do we move forward in a productive way, would you say?
Well, I think more dialogues will bring us along to be more productive towards that. Resolving that conundrum, but I think we shouldn't get our expectations so high that we can resolve that. We are going to have differences. there are going to be people that reject the message of Jesus and what he wants us to be as his followers. He said if we love him, we're going to go with his ways, and so we can't expect to overcome that. What we shouldn't be doing, but I don't see any evidence in this situation that it is happening, is that we're rejecting these people. You know, these people are made in the image of God. We're all created as his children, and we've got to show them love. When we don't want to put a sign up on our business just saying stay away or something, but we want to dialogue with them. If they do come into our shop or they do request our services, we should use that as an opportunity to tell them about the hope that is within us, as the Apostle Peter told us we should always do, and tell them, here's my principles of why I can't help you in this particular case, or why I won't do this wedding. These are my principles, and I hope you will respect them. So we should see it as an opportunity of dialogue. We shouldn't lock the doors or put signs up in the window that saying, you know, gays don't come here or something like that. We don't want to go there. We want a dialogue.
Right.
So I don't think we'll ever overcome the conundrum, as you call it, but it's actually an opportunity for us to show our faith in the marketplace.
Would you agree that one of the powerful things about the free market and free market enterprise is that it brings people together from different categories and even different cultures, for that matter, that might not otherwise dialogue or come together without a free market transaction? I mean, isn't that one of the social benefits of having a free market economy where I can do business with somebody with whom I really have very little in common with?
Exactly. When to use Thomas Friedman's idea about the world being flat, the globalization and the more we interact with other cultures and other people is all because of the market. It's all because of the free market. That has all occurred because we've traded with others, because we've been willing to do business with others. So it's definitely a social benefit of the free market. That we have more dialogue and we interact with others. We get to know other people as people, not just other cultures. You know, we get to know them as children of God and created in his image. And so it's a great opportunity for both to improve our well-being as well as to speak the message of Jesus and his gospel.
Mm-hmm.
So if you just look at one of the most successful free market ideas ever, Starbucks. The coffee shop, right?
Yes.
Just the free market working created this a terrific company that provided a product that nobody really knew they even wanted beforehand.
Yes,
and now everybody needs it almost. Right. But they're running this campaign. Okay, we want to talk about race issues right now, and so they're taking a little flack for that campaign, but. Think about what they're doing. They're creating a free marketplace where dialogue happens. And you do talk about issues and people from different walks of life come together and talk about things. And so, yes, we should look to the free market as a great opportunity to discuss our issues and meet one-on-one and know each other and learn more about each other.
Well, I think we're getting closer to a solution. Dr. P. Crabb, Professor of Economics and Finance at Northwest Nazarene University, all the way out there in Idaho. Is this customary for you to be up at this very early hour, Dr. Crabb?
No, but it's always fun to talk to you.
You're very gracious. Listen, always a pleasure to speak to you. Thanks very much, and I appreciate your insight. We look forward to talking to you again soon.
All right, take care. Thank you.
23 past the hour from the Faith Radio Network. I am Austin Hill. Our program continues. Minutes past the hour from the Faith Radio Network, and I am Austin Hill. Honored to be with you weekday mornings. Weekdays at 12 noon Central Time, it's the Connecting Faith program. Yesterday, host Neil Stavem interviewed Pastor Rob Morgan as they talked about some of the best love stories and hymns of Holy Week. Here's part of that discussion.
Now, let me ask you a question. Have you ever gotten bored during a sermon?
I would say, you know, not recently, but I would say there was a few years in my teens. I could certainly attest to that.
Well, of course, it depends some on the preacher, doesn't it? There was a woman who lived back in the 1860s named Elvina Hall, who was in the choir, and she got bored during a sermon. She was sitting up in the choir loft, and it was at the Monument Street Methodist Church in Baltimore. And while the pastor was droning on, her mind wandered, and she opened her Bible to the flyleaf, and she began composing a song. And it was the song, "I heard my Savior say, thy strength indeed is small. Child of weakness, watch and pray, find in me thy all in all." She didn't actually have those exact words to begin with. She had the beginnings of it, and she kept working on it until finally she had this song just exactly the way she wanted it. And she gave it to the organist at her church, whose name was John Grape. And the organist, actually the organ was under repair, and he had it at his house. And so he took her song home, and there at the church organ, which was at the time in his house, he composed the music. So this is a hymn, "Jesus Paid It All," that came about as the result of a boring sermon.
I'm sure you've never had one, and let's hope that we make good use of any of those opportunities. But let's hear a little bit of this wonderful hymn, "Jesus Paid It All."
"My strength indeed is small. Child of weakness, watch and pray. Find in me thine all in all. Jesus paid it all."
That's just a sample from yesterday's episode of Connecting Faith with host Neil Stavem. Coming up at 12 noon Central Time on today's episode, Neil interviews author John Dixon to talk about his book, A Doubter's Guide to the Bible. 12 noon Central Time, it's the Faith Radio Network. The program is called Connecting Faith. It's now 29 past the hour, make it 30 past the hour Central Time from the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill here weekday mornings. As we continue, let's talk about strengthening marriages. We'll get some interesting perspective on a difficult issue from our great friend Dr. Linda Mental. She's on the way. SRN News, up next. Six past the hour. Good morning. It's Tuesday. Welcome to it. This is the Austin Hill in the Morning program. You're listening to the Faith Radio Network. Could there be an adulterous affair in your future? Nobody wants to be asked that question. Certainly nobody wants to answer it. But our great friend, Dr. Linda Mental, best-selling author, the relationship doctor, she's taken on this otherwise very difficult subject. In fact, she's written about it in a piece entitled, Five Factors That Put You at Risk for an Affair. She joins us on our guest line now. Dr. Mental, welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Austin. And there's a lot of sort of bad news that you were reporting just a few minutes ago, but I think this is one thing that we do have control over, and we can take some preventative steps. We can't always control the events in our world. We can't always control what happens around us, but we can control our own bodies and what we do. So I think this is one thing, if we're feeling kind of powerless and out of control, it's a good topic to kind of switch gears and say, hey, here's a place in your life where you can keep things on track and actually have a good outcome.
I appreciate that. No, your point's very well taken. It is nonetheless a difficult subject to approach for a pastor in a pulpit, or maybe even for an individual in a small Bible study group or something like that. And this is a challenge for a clinician like you to approach, I would suspect. Tell us about the challenge.
Well, it's a little bit like what you were just saying. We have to be aware of what's going on in our culture, and we have to be aware of what's even going on with Christian people. And when you look at the statistics, some say 1 in 4, some say 1 in 5 married people admit to having some type of sexual infidelity. So that means when you're sitting in a gathering, 1 person in 4 could be struggling in that area. So again, like you were saying, let's get to the root of this. Let's find out why this is happening. Certainly, most of us are aware that we live in a very sexually saturated society where there is a great deal of opportunity, and even more so today because of all the visual images on internet and mobile phones and devices and everything that we're dealing with in this culture. So we've moved really from a culture of words to a culture of images, and that doesn't help when it comes to keeping ourselves faithful if we're not careful and we don't do the things that the Bible prescribes for us to do.
And let's get to those Bible biblical prescriptions, if you will, here in just a moment. Dr. Mintel, you note that one of the risk factors for whether or not somebody cheats on their spouse is being male. I mean, the guy right from the get-go, and you are very clear to say, you know, you're not being pejorative against the male gender, but you're just saying from the get-go, men are more inclined to stray than women. Tell us about that.
Well, let's look at this, the stats again, and let we know that men do cheat more than females do. And this statistic has actually been less of a gap than it has been in previous years because, again, women have more opportunity being more in the workplace, having more economic status, because money and opportunity sometimes go together. So there's more access for women now than there used to be, but still, men tend to cheat more often than women. And, you know, we just have to think about that for a moment and think part of it is the way men are so visually oriented over women. But it's really interesting when you look at what motivates men to cheat. It is related to sexual dissatisfaction, but it's even bigger than that. It's really when men are looking outside of the marriage for an emotional relationship or a sexual relationship, they're looking for women who are usually more interesting than their wives. And they're not necessarily looking for someone who's more attractive, which always kind of throws people when they find out that their husband has had a relationship. It's not that the person is more attractive. It's not necessarily that the person is younger. But the person tends to be someone who's more interesting, who listens more, who cares and shows compassion, and, of course, is interested in the intimate part of the relationship as well. But that sometimes throws people when they hear that because they think it's just all about the intimacy and the sex and not about these other factors. Hmm. Women, on the other hand, and this is why this is where they are a little bit similar, women tend to cheat because of emotional dissatisfaction. For men, it begins with some sexual dissatisfaction. For women, it begins with emotional dissatisfaction. And they want other men to reinforce the idea that they're desirable. So when you hear those two things should come to your mind. First thing should be women, you need to keep interesting. You need to be interesting. You need to be caring, and you need to be compassionate and show compassion to your spouse. And men, you need to be emotionally tuned in, and you need to be telling your wives that they're attractive because those two things right there will be one of the preventions of that cycle I just described.
Sure. You know, we'll get to some of the biblical solutions that you're proposing here, Dr. Mintel, in just a moment. One of the things you note in your recent writing on this risk factors for an adulterous affair, you note that most all of us, in one fashion or another, we just have more opportunity to interact with people of the opposite sex and possibly be put into or allow ourselves to get into a potentially compromising situation. I'm thinking of social media. I mean, my goodness, people, and email as well, but instant messaging and posting on Facebook and those kinds of things, that creates this environment. It is an environment where we are compelled, invited to just kind of pop off and react and like this photo and post a quick pithy comment here. And you know, I know very well how one can get drawn into conversations that you look back and think, my goodness, that wasn't really appropriate and that conveyed the wrong thing. And I'm disappointed that I did that. But is the social media phenomena, the instantaneous public and yet very private communication that we can engage in via social media and the internet, is that a part of the dilemma in your view?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the reasons why women have raised their stats for having infidelity, because that's one of the ways that they have more access. You can be a young mom who's going a little crazy in the house with maybe a couple of toddlers, and you can jump on Facebook and you can be intimate with somebody from your past or somebody that you met online or you know, in any kind of the social media chat rooms. So that is one of those places that's very tempting. But here's what's interesting. There was a study done a while back where they put complete strangers across the table from each other, and they told them not to talk, but to stare into each other's eyes for 4 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
No conversation, just stare in each other's eyes. At the end of that time, they surveyed the two people separately, and both of the people said that they felt attracted to that other person. So what that tells us is that when you spend a lot of time with the opposite sex in intimate opportunities, you're with them, maybe you're having lunch with them constantly, you're having chats all the time, you're meeting them for coffee, you're in the workplace where you have to work intimately maybe with a team,
right,
and you're constantly seeing people, you need to be aware that that emotional closeness and constantly being with that person, you might be with that person 8 hours a day and with your spouse maybe 4 or 5 in the day,
mm-hmm,
that closeness puts you at risk. So that's opportunity right there in terms of who you're hanging out with.
All right, quick break. We'll continue with Dr. Linda Vintel in just a few moments. Some biblical solutions to the dilemma that she's getting at. We'll get to that up next. It's the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. Seven minutes past the hour from the Faith Radio Network. Good morning. I'm Austin Hill. 5 warning signs that you may be vulnerable to an adulterous affair. Dr. Linda Vintel, the relationship doctor, best-selling author. She has written this excellent piece that you'll find on our website at myfaithradio.com with the fine warning signs. Probably something a lot of us would like to avoid, but we best not. And Dr. Vintel, you noted a moment ago that the scriptures themselves speak to the solutions to avoid these pitfalls. Tell us about that.
Well, I think it's very similar when you're talking about affairs, very similar to somebody who's an alcoholic. An alcoholic is not told to go sit in a bar and just hope and pray that they can handle that situation.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing is true of somebody who's struggling with sexual temptation. If you allow yourself to sit in it, chances are you're going to give in to it. So it's the scripture. There's several scriptures on temptation to flee, to resist, to get away from it. So the best thing you can do from a scriptural point of view is when you're starting to feel tempted is to get away from it. Stop talking to that person. Stop seeing that person. Cut off the social media. Take them off your friend list. Whatever you have to do to get away from that. The second biblical principle that is very important here is that you need to guard your heart and your mind and your eyes. And there's a lot of scripture about the eyes and looking at things, looking at someone to lust. Jesus says, if you just look on a woman and you have lust in your heart, it's the same as committing adultery. So we have to guard our eyes and our hearts. And I tell you, that is tough for especially men these days, because everywhere you look, you know, Austin, you can walk down in the mall with your teenage son and walk past the Victoria's Secrets, and it's a little bit like walking past soft porn, and the eyes are easy to follow those
mm-hmm.
images. We have so many images that we can see and get access to. We have to be very intentional these days to guard our eyes, guard our hearts, guard our minds, not let our minds go there. What's interesting is when you have an affair, you know you're going down that direction. People know they're doing it. You can feel it. You know it. You know it's wrong, and you're playing with fire, and you've got to shut that off immediately and turn the other way, or you're going to have problems.
You know, with respect to what you're saying, Dr. Linda, about fleeing temptation, cutting off all contact with somebody that you may be tempted by, what does a person do in the workplace where they're working side by side closely, maybe even 8 hours a day, as you were describing in the previous segment, with somebody of the opposite sex? There's attention, there's an attraction there. You can't just walk away. You cannot just shut off all contact with that person. You have to keep it professional and not let your mind wander. What do you say to that individual?
Well, you just said it at the very end. You need to not let your mind wander. So this is where renewing the mind, where Scripture says daily renew the mind. When your thoughts are going that direction towards that person, you've got to grab those thoughts. You've got to renew those thoughts with the truth of Christ. And you can ask the Holy Spirit, help me right here. Help me to resist this and to change the thought in my head. So instead of looking at that person sexually, I might change the thought to something like, okay, that's my coworker. I'm working on a team. I'm going to keep it business. And you change that thought because your thoughts influence your emotions, which then influence your behavior. So they're all tied together there. So keeping an eye on your thoughts. If you've had an affair or you've been problematic with someone in the workplace, I have counseled people to get a different job. I mean, I have. If you've had a very intense emotional or sexual relationship with somebody at the workplace, because it is very difficult to cut that off when you're continuously to see. That's the problem with sexual sin, mm-hmm. is that it unites you with somebody. You leave a part of yourself with that person. That's why they call them soul ties. And so it is difficult. But the best thing is wherever you're at with that in the workplace, stop it. And then try to renew your mind, minimize the contact if possible, and then renew your mind every time you see that person, and ask and repent. And ask the Lord to help you deal with this situation in a much better way, and the Lord will do that.
Dr. Linda Mental, 5 warning signs that there could be temptation for an affair in your pathway. You'll find that on our website at myfaithradio.com. Always helpful and insightful information, and something we should all take to heart. Dr. Linda, as always, thanks much. Great to talk to you. We look forward to talking again very, very soon.
Okay, take care.
It's 51 past the hour from the Faith Radio Network. Tuesday morning underway. We're glad you're with us. I'm Austin Hill.
Your hands, I
want to
be your feet.
53 past the hour from the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. Still to come into the 7 o'clock hour, the next hour of our program, some thoughts on Pastor Saeed Abedini, the American Christian pastor from, of all places, Boise, Idaho. He is currently languishing in a prison in the nation of Iran. We'll get you an update on that in about 40 minutes from now. Weekday afternoons, 3 till 5 p.m. Central Time here on the Faith Radio Network. It's the Live the Promise program with host Susie Larson. Yesterday, Susie welcomed author Oz Guinness to the program to talk about his book, Renaissance, The Power of the Gospel, However Dark the Times. Here's part of that discussion.
We're in the world. We've got to know where the world is helpful and where the world is harmful. And that's one of the huge problems in the church today. People can discern, say, philosophies like relativism or humanism, but they don't discern the impact of things like cell phones or television or consumer shopping or whatever. And that's actually shaping us just as much as the others. But then thirdly, we've got to have engagement, discernment, but courage. Wherever the way of the Lord is different from the way of the world, we've got to be different. And we've got to say no. And sadly, many evangelicals, they're weak as the world is, I said earlier, but there's no real difference between them and the world. And now they're caving into things like the LGBT agenda and so on. Evangelicals are in a craven mood that's cowardly as well as worldly.
I'm taking notes again, but it's worth the wait, friends, to stay with me. Okay, whenever the way of the world is different than the way of God, we've got to say no. And we need engagement, discernment, and courage. And there's two kinds of people, those who love God, those who love themselves. And if we live the gospel, the Lord will do it. Those are all such powerful statements. When I'm thinking about this, we're not the first to have to do this, as many heroes have gone before us. In fact, you mentioned Daniel holding fast his convictions in Babylon. And talk about just maybe what stands out to you about Daniel, what we can learn even from Daniel's example of holding fast to his convictions and being excellent where God had called him.
No, his story is absolutely remarkable. His faithfulness in prayer, his lifestyle from his diet onwards, and the way that trusting the Lord and being in touch with the Lord through the extraordinary dreams and visions he had, he's actually, under the Lord, able to shape the foreign policy and domestic policy of the superpower of his day. I think it's the most remarkable story, and we need people of courage and faithfulness just like that. You know, I look back today and think of people like, say, St. Athanasius, who was called Contramundum. Everyone went the way of Arianism. including the emperor and the empress and most of the bishops of his time, and he stood contra mundum, against the world. And thank God he did, and the orthodoxy we have now with our view of Jesus is because he stood firm. And we need people today who are going to stand firm contra mundum, against the world, against the prevailing opinion. And you can see how so many in the church today, they're ruled by opinion polls and surveys. 51% in the latest this, that, and the other says. And so we've got to back a lot of these things in the name of knowing we have a different vision of human flourishing, the way of the gospel. And we're going to stand for it with courage.
That's from yesterday's episode of Live the Promise with host Susie Larson. Coming up on today's episode, evangelist Matt Brown will join the program to talk about the movement of God around the world. That's weekday afternoons, 3 till 5 p.m. Central Time from the Faith Radio Network, the Live the Promise program with host Susie Larson. Here we are in the week before Easter, referred to as Holy Week in many parts of the world and in most Christian traditions, I would say. And this is kind of an interesting little positive tidbit of news. In the small town, as I understand it, of Cranston, Rhode Island. Cranston, Rhode Island. Prior to present day, public school teachers in the small public school district in Cranston, Rhode Island, were forbidden to observe Good Friday, to take the day off as a part of their otherwise allotted personal days. Well, the teachers' union representing the public school teachers in Cranston, Rhode Island, actually went to bat on behalf of, believe it or not, Christian public school teachers in that small town. And the school district has now agreed to allow public school teachers in that district to observe Good Friday, take the day off with pay, as one of their optional personal religious observation days. Kind of peculiar that a Christian observance like Good Friday would necessarily be singled out by an employer, and the employees would be told, no, this is not one of those personal religious days that you can observe. It's interesting. Anyway, a nice victory for Christian public school teachers in Cranston, Rhode Island. Wanted to pass that on to you. Coming up into our next hour, we'll get an update on the plight of our brother, our fellow American, our fellow Christian, Pastor Saeed Abedini, pastor at Calvary Chapel Church in Middle America, quite frankly, Boise, Idaho. But he's not in Boise, Idaho. He's holed up in a prison in the country of Iran. And he's been the subject of much national and international media debates. We'll get an update from the law firm that represents him coming up in about half an hour. Also, more thoughts on the religious freedom versus the demand that Christian business owners perform their services for LGBT America. Well, this and more just ahead. It's the Austin Hill in the Morning program. SRN News next.
Start your day connecting faith to life. It's Austin Hill in the Morning.
Good morning. Welcome to our program. 4 minutes past the hour from the Faith Radio Network. And I am Austin Hill, honored to be with you weekday morning, 6 till 8 Central Time, as we seek to be informative, challenging, hopeful, and helpful here at the start of the day. Coming up in just a few moments, we'll take calls, actually. We'll go to the phones and get your thoughts on this. I call it a conundrum, quite frankly, this uproar in our country, here in the U.S., and it's taking hold in a variety of different places all over the country, but Indiana is in the spotlight right now, this uproar over religious freedom versus, quote-unquote, tolerance for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered persons. And I'll pose this question right now. We'll get to your calls at 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. Can we ever get along again? I mean, can this situation improve? I'll give you my thoughts on, I think, what's transpired here. But I really do believe, and I'll lay this out here in a few moments, but I believe the uprisings that we're seeing, the uproar anyway, that we're seeing going on right now, has, well, it's kind of the culmination of things that have been building for a good 20 or 25 years or so. But can things improve? Can things get better for Christians and specifically Christian business owners here in the United States of America? We'll talk about this coming up in just a few moments. There are ramifications, by the way, for nonprofit ministries, I believe, going forward into the future. Not right now, but down the road, there are ramifications here for what we're seeing, this tension between those who advocate for rights and protections for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgendered, or questioning people, and those who adhere to some sort of traditional Judeo-Christian ethic on the definition of marriage, on the definition of sexuality, gender, and all the rest. So stand by. We'll continue with that in just a few moments. Also, later this hour, more on the plight of police officers across the country. And if we have time, we'll squeeze in some information here about how churches and Christians are stepping up to assist in being supportive of law enforcement officers as they go about doing a very, very dangerous job. We'll also get an update on Pastor Saeed Avedini, as you heard from the top of the hour newscast from our network news provider, SRN News. We are awaiting some sort of outcome. It's supposed to, tonight actually, in Tehran, the capital city of Iran, tonight is the deadline whereby the United States of America, our U.S. federal government, is supposed to culminate or complete some sort of trade deal or nuclear deal, if you will, that would allow the nation of Iran to actually secure and maintain nuclear energy sources. But it would also be an agreement with Iran that Iran would not develop those nuclear power sources into nuclear weaponry. Most of the free world, I would tell you, including a lot of public officials here in the United States, but the nation of France, the nation of Germany, the UK, Canada, officials in most of the free world are saying this is a bad thing and Iran is not to be trusted. Nonetheless, our president and his administration is moving forward and there's supposedly going to be some sort of agreement tonight, one way or the other. In the midst of all of this, and I bring up the nuclear agreements between the U.S., really between the free world and Iran, I bring that up because in the midst of that, a Christian pastor from Boise, Idaho, I've spoken of him many times before. A lot of our guests have talked about his plight. He is Pastor Saeed Avedini. He is languishing in a prison against his will and, quite frankly, against international law. He is in Tehran, Iran, in a very dangerous prison. And, quite frankly, I would hope that we may see some movement and maybe even a release of Pastor Saeed Avedini should some sort of agreement come to fruition. Now, I'm not saying that an agreement between the U.S. and Iran is a good thing. I am saying, however, that a release of Pastor Saeed Avedini would be a very good thing. We can hope and pray for this, right? But we'll get an update from the legal counsel, the law firm that represents Mr. Avedini and his family's various endeavors with the U.S. government, with the government of Iran, and elsewhere. The American Center for Law and Justice, a nonprofit law firm, they'll weigh in with us coming up in about half an hour from now. Stand by for more. We'll get to your calls at 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. Can things improve? Can things get better? Can we move forward in a productive way with this tension in our country over religious liberty versus the freedoms and the rights of those who are lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender? I'll give you my thoughts. We'll get your calls coming up. It's the Faith Radio Network, and I'm Austin Hill.
We want to know what you think. Join the conversation at 877-933-2484. It's Austin Hill in the morning.
Such fun, funky music here on a Tuesday morning. What to what do I owe this great blessing? It's fun, funky Music Tuesday here at Faith Radio. It's 11 minutes past the hour, and we're glad you're with us here on the Austin Hill in the Morning program. Our number, 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. Can things improve in terms of the plight of Christian men and women who choose to own and operate businesses, but they don't necessarily want to do business in the context of gay or lesbian weddings? We are reaching a bit of a boiling point. When I say boiling point, I'm not talking about civil unrest and violence out in the streets and those kinds of things. But there's a boiling point being reached in the context of law firms and attorneys' offices and in courtrooms in some cases and at state legislatures and those kinds of things. And it is really, really costly. There's a monetary cost, and there's also, I think, a social cost. Different categories of our society, different subcategories are at each other's throats, rhetorically speaking. And it's just ugly. And I'd like to think that Christians, those of us called, who identify with the name of Christ, who call ourselves by the name of Christ follower, I'd like to think that we can step up and hopefully make the difference. But it really is reaching the point where we can no longer ignore this, at least in my estimation. I know that a lot of people in my own church, for that matter, roll their eyes and say, oh, this is just politics. I want nothing to do with politics. This is just, politics is ugly. I want to ignore this. Forget this. Don't talk to me about that. This is not just politics. This is the governance of our society. These are the rules that we all are supposed to abide by, that we are all supposed to be held to, and they are the ways in which things happen in our day-to-day lives out and about in the marketplace. Now, let me just kind of give you a thumbnail sketch of what's gone on here. We have a couple, over the last 3 or 4 years, a couple of very high-profile, extraordinary cases of, the most recent one, a case that we've talked about quite a bit here on the program earlier this year, a case involving a lady named Baronelle Stutzman. Baronelle Stutzman, she is a 70-year-old lady. She is a grandmother. She lives in a small town in the state of Washington. She owns and operates a flower shop, and she was brought before the legal system in her state because one of her longstanding clients, actually, a man who happened to be gay, who bought flowers at her privately owned flower shop for a number of years, he came to the store one day and said, I'm getting married to a man, and I'd like for you to provide the floral arrangements at the chapel where we're getting married. That's where she drew the line in the sand for her personally, and she said, I'm sorry, I love you, whoever the gentleman's name was, and I love doing business with you, but that's just not something that my religious faith, my Christian faith, will allow me to do, to cater flowers to your wedding. And so he took, pretty quickly, as I understand it, took to Facebook, started posting very derogatory things about her on his Facebook page. The attorney general, the elected attorney general in the state of Washington, found that on Facebook and launched an investigation into Ms. Stutzman's flower shop. She is now facing a very, very hefty fine. She's told if you just pay the fine and you go out and do flowers for lesbian and gay weddings, we'll dismiss all the charges against you. She's got her heels firmly planted in the soil, and she's refusing to pay the fine and refusing to provide flowers to lesbian and gay weddings. And she's now, the most recent development, as of late last week, Ms. Stutzman is being threatened with the state of Washington, the government of Washington, moving in and seizing her store, seizing her assets, just taking over the shop. In another incident that dates back to 2011, as I understand it, a married couple, young married couple, they're not even 40 years old, based on what I've seen of them, married couple, he worked a full-time job, and she stayed home with the kids, but they ran a bakery business where they did food catering for all kinds of events, weddings included, but they catered a lot of corporate events, business events and such. They had a bakery. They'd bake a lot of their own food products and go out and cater parties and those kinds of things. Their bakery and catering business was solicited from a lesbian couple. And the husband and wife that ran the bakery and catering business said, no, we're not going to do this. Our Christian faith doesn't allow us to do this. They have fallen under very harsh penalty from the government of the state of Oregon, and with some very effective Facebook campaigns bashing them and trashing them. They're pretty much out of business. They've lost all the business that they had with, you know, they used to go out and cater events at specific hotels and business centers and such. They live in a suburb of Portland. So they're out of business, and basically they're upside down. My understanding is the married couple is so far in debt, they may very well lose their house. And they're also facing some very stiff penalties from the government of Oregon. Well, that's the backdrop here. That's the backdrop within which the state of Indiana, the elected officials there and the governor there, they passed a bill in the legislature, and the governor signed it into law, which seeks to give protections for quote-unquote religious freedom and seeks to provide legal safeguards for a Christian or any other business owner operator who, for religious reasons, does not want to provide their product or their service to a particular person or individual or a particular part of society. Now, the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender community looks at that and says, well, that's, you know, that's legal discrimination against us. We're the ones being targeted here. Ostensibly, that's probably the case. But can we get beyond this one category of society going after and responding in a hostile way to another category of society? Can we reach beyond this? I do think that Christians hold the answer. I do believe there's a way out of this conundrum, but it's going to require some changing and some challenging thoughts. And it starts with some challenging discussion, I believe, within the Christian community. I'll tell you more about what I think about this. We'll get your calls coming up. It's 877-933-2484. What do you think? Is there a way out of this? This is, as I said, we are reaching a boiling point where it's no longer an option to take a serious look at this. If you're a pastor of a church, you probably have some business owners in your church. And don't think that just because it's not a flower business or a catering business that they cannot become a target of this kind of hostility. We need to be thinking about these kinds of things and doing so thoughtfully. 877-933-2484. More on this in just a moment as we continue. 18 past the hour. It's the Faith Radio Network, and I'm Austin Hill. We're glad you're with us.
Back to Austin Hill in the morning. Join the conversation by calling 877-933-2484.
22 minutes past the hour from the Faith Radio Network. Glad you're with us. So on the issue of this ongoing tension between the rights of lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgendered persons and the rights and liberties of those who adhere to a traditional Christian, Judeo-Christian, biblical view of marriage and sexuality and the definition of family and such. We need to resolve this. I do want to point out something that has gone completely unnoticed. And this falls into the category of we can't always follow what the dominant news media reports and doesn't report. We can't allow our view of what's happening in our country and our world to be framed and defined by dominant media forces. This is going completely ignored, and it's gone over so well, it's been so widely and warmly embraced and accepted by those for whom this new policy, these new sets of policies impact. It's just being completely ignored. But while the Indiana law regarding religious freedom is deemed to be oh so controversial and hateful, and there's this building backlash and such, what has gone completely ignored, and yet what is worthy of your attention and mine, is the fact that earlier this year in the state of Utah, interestingly, that state, with their legislature, their elected officials and their governor, they passed a new law that actually does secure protections from discrimination for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered people in terms of housing and employment opportunities and other kinds of business transactions, while at the same time granting exemptions for religious organizations. And the fact that you and I have probably heard very little about this, I had to dig deep and research this. But if that's news to you, well, that should tell us all something. When things go well, it doesn't make the headlines. This new law in the state of Utah has received almost unanimous approval and applause. And those on the left, those on the right, those in traditional church environments, those from the LGBT community, they're all applauding this, saying, yeah, this is a good compromise. We can live with this. And so Utah may very well be the model for the rest of the country going forward. But I would also want to suggest this, that one of the problems, I really do believe that this is the crux of the matter here, as best as I can discern this. And I will tell you that a guy who was on our program just yesterday, actually, I've interviewed him several times, he's been with us several times, Dr. George Barna, the esteemed researcher, his new book, U-Turn, that we discussed with him yesterday, it really accentuates and highlights this reality. The crux of the matter here, as best as I can tell it, is this. In the United States of America, we have lost sight over what the real, true, intended purpose of government is supposed to be about. Government is supposed to exist to protect our liberties. And over the course of all of my lifetime, we've been on this steady erosion in our country where people have lost sight of what's the purpose of government. We look to the government to give us things, to give us products and services and to meet our needs, to fix our mortgage, to educate ourselves and give us college opportunities and health care and free food and everything. All the rest, I mean, there's an economic redistribution component of what we look to government for. But worse than that, I believe that we've come to see, as Americans, and as George Barna has pointed out, Christians play right into this. We see governments as a means of giving people like us special kinds of privileges and protections while punishing those who are not like us. That's really what's out of whack here. And again, that's not me just making that up. That may sound like a harsh pill to swallow, so to speak. George Barna said it very eloquently yesterday here in our program. Americans, as he surveyed and researched this, Americans really, we want to elect people, send really super smart people to the Capitol or whatever, and pay no attention to what goes on. And then when things go wrong, we get really, really upset. We want people, we vote for people who promise to do special things for us. But we need to get back to a position, an understanding, where we recognize that this environment of freedom that we cherish, freedom to live out our faith, yes, but freedom for others to choose a different course as well. Freedom needs to be safeguarded and protected for all of us, not just for me and you, if you think like me, but for I need to stand up for freedom, even for those who vehemently disagree with me and whose ideas and positions and views of things I just think are crazy. We've lost sight of that, and I believe Christians, we can be the thoughtful ones who restore sanity to this ongoing fight, this ongoing squabble in our country. This notion that good government is something that squelches people who I don't like and I don't agree with and enhances those who I do agree with, that notion is really, really destructive. We can abandon it. We can move on to something better. And I believe and I hope and I pray that we are in the context of the Christian community. It's 26 past the hour. It's the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. Our program continues momentarily. Don't go anywhere.
Getting your day started, connecting faith to life. Back to Austin Hill in the morning.
37 past the hour. Good morning and welcome to our program.
Good morning. As some of you might know, my husband, Pastor Saeed Abedini, is an American pastor who's imprisoned in Iran because of his Christian faith. He's been tortured and beaten and told to denounce his Christian faith and return to Islam, but he stood strong in his faith and proclaimed Jesus as his Lord and Savior.
The voice of Nagme Abedini. She is the spouse, the wife of Pastor Saeed Abedini, both of them from Boise, Idaho. Pastor Saeed, of course, still a staff pastor at Calvary Chapel Church in Boise, Idaho. Pastor Saeed is languishing in a very dangerous prison, what we know to be a very dangerous prison, in Tehran, the capital city of Iran. What's going on with him, and what does the prospect of his release look like? Joining us to talk about it, Tiffany Barnes. She is the legal director at the American Center for Law and Justice, a nonprofit law firm here in the United States that's representing Mr. Abedini and his family in a whole bunch of very difficult circumstances. Tiffany Barnes, welcome back to the program. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
Where do you start with updating folks on Pastor Saeed?
Well, Nagme, I think his wife just gave a great brief introduction of the case. It's amazing to me, still after all of these years, how many people don't even know his story, don't know that he was there building an orphanage, that he was there with the government's permission, that they arrested him solely for his religious beliefs, and now, you know, has an 8-year sentence to serve in an Iranian prison solely for being a Christian, which is, of course, what we at the ACLJ and myself have been fighting to see that he is freed and released and brought back to Nagme and, of course, their two beautiful children, Rebecca and Jacob.
Mm-hmm. Tiffany Barnes, is it the belief of yourself and your associates at the American Center for Law and Justice that were it really the will of those in the U.S. government to get Pastor Saeed home, they have the wherewithal, they have the power, they have the capacity to make that happen?
I think that the simple answer to that is yes. We recognize at the ACLJ that the geopolitical situation with Iran is very complicated. We know, and having worked on these cases in the past, that frequently the United States has to look to a third-party country that has diplomatic relations, that has that direct line of talk to the Iranians to be able to free an American. The difference in this situation is that for the first time in 35-plus years, America is sitting across the table from Iran. So no longer do we have this excuse, we don't have that direct line of communication. I think what we've essentially seen is, while Saeed is a priority, as the president has said directly to Nagme when he visited her in Idaho, there are other priorities that are in somewhat getting in the way, if I can say it in a simple manner, getting in the way of seeing that he is brought home.
Historically, if I understand where you're going with this, Tiffany Barnes, a third-party nation might have engaged between the United States and Iran. Historically, my guess is that nation would have been Egypt, correct?
You know, we've used various people in the past, some very publicly, some quietly. I know that Oman actually has been an incredible source for the United States. That's who intervened to assist with the three American hikers who had been imprisoned there. I know we've gone through the UAE before. So it really just kind of depends on which country is willing to go to bat and be that intermediary for the United States. But at the present stage, because we're sitting directly across the table from Iran during these nuclear talks, we aren't looking to a third party, and yet we technically still don't have diplomatic status with Iran. So it's a very complicated situation.
Tiffany Barnes, she's the legal director at the American Center for Law and Justice, a nonprofit law firm headquartered here in the United States that is providing legal representation to Christian Pastor Saeed Abedini as he's being held against his will, and I would say against the law, international law, in a prison in the country of Iran. Tiffany, going forward, we look at the present circumstances, and supposedly some sort of nuclear weaponry deal was to be reached by the United States and Iran by nighttime, midnight, I guess, Tehran time. Now reports indicate here in the West that that's not going to happen. This may get dragged out until June or at some place down the line. The negotiations will continue. The can is being proverbially kicked down the road, so to speak. Presumably, this means that Pastor Saeed's plight gets dragged out here. Is it the case that Pastor Saeed is perhaps a bargaining chip in the midst of this international dialogue, this international negotiation?
Oh, Absolutely, no question. No question at all that he has essentially been held hostage by the Iranians at this point. And although he was originally taken and targeted simply because of his Christian faith, and he continues to suffer persecution in the prison because of his Christian faith, we have had numerous instances, both inside of Iran and outside, where the Iranians have made it clear, at least those that would be the fundamentalist hardliners, those who keep him, that have made it clear that they see him as a point of leverage in these nuclear negotiations.
What would you want Christians here in the U.S. to do in response to this news?
More than anything, one of the things that I think is so powerful about Nagmeh's testimony over the last few months is, you know, we can strive as human beings, and myself as an attorney, to make the appointments happen, to set up whatever's going to trigger his release. But ultimately, we recognize that the power of prayer is what's going to make that happen. The power of prayer and fasting is what got Nagmeh the meeting with President Obama. It was during a season at the very end of our 21 days of fasting in January. And so I ask Christians to pray for the hearts of our leaders, to pray for those who that are negotiating this nuclear deal, because certainly Saeed is, and his fate is a part of that. So I ask you not only to pray for wisdom for our American leaders who are over there,
mm-hmm.
but also pray for the hearts of those men and women in Iran who continue to hold the keys that would let him out of prison.
Tiffany Barrington, also, and I'm not discounting or downplaying the significance of the prayer and fasting at all, Nagmeh Abedini has been on this program, and so have some of your associates earlier on, and they're all quick to say that's our starting point. Nagmeh has been on the program at the same time and has said, you know what, I've sat before members of Congress and give them my testimony as to what has happened to my son, or to my husband, rather, and what's going on with my kids back home. And I have seen the hearts and minds of legislators, members of Congress, change as they hear what's going on and as they hear my expressed desires. And, in fact, we have a soundbite of her. We don't need to get to it right now, but she says, call your members of Congress and tell them this is a priority. It seems as though there is kind of an awakening, maybe among Christians, perhaps Mrs. Abedini herself, that in our free society, we do have a voice in these matters. We're not just hopeless victims to people in Washington, D.C., who make all our decisions for us. We have a voice if we will exercise it. Tell us about that.
Absolutely. The role that we as American citizens can play in engaging our government on these issues. Our government, because it is an elected government, they listen to us as their constituents. A quick example of that would be, you know, you can come on the ACLJ's website and sign our petitions. I take those petitions along with my colleagues to various nations, to our leaders here in the United States, and show them the interest and concern of the people, and it moves them. At one of my meetings with an American ambassador overseas, the ambassador said to me, I don't know what you're doing to get the members of Congress to move, but keep doing it because it's the only reason our administration is doing anything overseas.
Mm-hmm.
So when your listeners pick up the phone and call their members of Congress, when they sit down to write that letter or email and say, this is a matter of concern for me, your constituent, that sets off a trigger. It really does. It's so much power behind it. It sets off a trigger that can ultimately lead to the release of the persecuted church and really shift our policy in the United States to say, not only will we be a country that says religious freedom is important, but we'll also act and our policy will take steps to ensure that we protect that, both here in the United States and abroad.
Tiffany Barrons, are we to expect that as long as, quote-unquote, negotiations and treaty discussions continue between the U.S. and Iran, Pastor Saeed necessarily will be held as that bargaining chip and will remain in prison?
Well, I can only speculate, but I think that's probably an accurate speculation. I think that the Iranians, because they see him as a bargaining chip, because they see that they might be able to get something for him, of value. And we have to recognize it's not just him. They actually have picked up other Americans, not necessarily for their faith,
mm-hmm.
But they are holding four Americans at present to collectively push the United States on this. So until there's some kind of agreement or a miracle from the Lord, which we could also pray for, that they will likely continue to hold him, yes.
Final question, how is the Abedini family? We've seen Nagme Abedini out and about in a whole bunch of speaking venues over the course of this year, just here within the first quarter of 2015. How are they doing?
It's been a difficult beginning to the year. I'm always amazed at her faith and the strength that comes from that. But I also see the moments of brokenness that we all have as human beings. And we just passed Jacob Abedini, Saeed and Nagme's son's birthday, his mm-hmm. seventh birthday. He was 4 years old when he last saw his dad. And I spoke with Nagme yesterday, and she was reminiscing about Easter and how important of a season that was for Saeed, and how it was probably the biggest holiday and memorial event of sorts that he spent with the kids, teaching them about Christianity. She had a video that she shared on her Facebook that was of Saeed sitting down and teaching the kids and making the cross and having them physically, through red paint and their handprints, put it on the cross and leave it for Christ. And so as that season comes in here this week, they're feeling that loss incredibly.
Understandably so. Tiffany Barron, she is the legal director at the American Center for Law and Justice, the nonprofit law firm that is representing Pastor Saeed Abedini during his imprisonment in the country of Iran. Tiffany, thanks so much for what you do. Thanks for scheduling with us. We look forward to talking again soon.
Yes, thank you. God bless.
It's 48 past the hour from the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. We're glad you're with us.
In the morning. Questions or comments for the show? You can leave them on our show page at myfaithradio.com.
53 past the hour from the Faith Radio Network, and I'm Austin Hill, honored to be with you weekday mornings 6 till 8 as we seek to be informative, challenging, hopeful, and helpful here at the start of your day. By the way, you've heard promos that we're running for this. Excuse me, but our spring share event is coming up in less than 2 weeks from now. Well, right about 2 weeks from now. And I do hope that you will seriously consider coming on board with us as a financial supporter of Faith Radio. If you have not done that in the past, if what you hear specifically on this morning program and then throughout the day, if this is useful information, and granted here on our morning program, we're taking a little bit different of an approach in terms of addressing current events from a biblical perspective and bringing different perspectives to the table as we all face the struggle of navigating an increasingly tumultuous and pluralistic world around us, finding hope and strength in the midst of that. If this is useful, I ask for you to support it. You can get started right now at myfaithradio.com. That's our network website, myfaithradio.com, and hope you'll plan to join us as well for our spring share event, as I said, coming up in just a couple of weeks. We're looking forward to it. We have a good time, and we're just so gratified and blessed by the financial support of yourself and other listeners. But don't waste time. You need not wait. You can get on board at myfaithradio.com even today, if you so choose. It's Holy Week in the minds of many Christians around the world. And, of course, Good Friday is coming up this Friday, and then Easter Sunday over the weekend. This caught my attention, and this may be happening in other parts of our country, perhaps in parts of Canada as well, maybe going on a whole bunch around the world, and the governmental authorities just simply haven't told us about this. But in the city of Mineola, New York, extra police officers involving, you know, extra overtime hours and those kinds of things, extra city police officers are patrolling very aggressively temples, synagogues, churches, and other houses of worship. That along New York's Long Island region in anticipation for the upcoming Passover and Easter holidays. That's in Mineola, New York, and elsewhere in that region of the New York City metropolitan area. Nassau County executive commissioners are saying that they will release details at a news conference later this morning in New York but they are taking extra precautions. Apparently there's some concern that there may very well be some attacks. They're saying at the very least there's a threat of property damage, and but it could be something worse, so they're not leaving things to chance, patrolling temples, synagogues, churches, and other houses of worship here on what is a holy week and a holy weekend in many respects for many Christians and for many Jews as well. Hope you'll be prayerful about that. Hopefully we'll get through the rest of this week and make our way through the Easter weekend safely and sanely, if you will. Now, coming up on tomorrow's broadcast here on this program, Austin Hill in the Morning, we'll be joined once again, of course, by our great friend Bill English, publisher of BibleAndBusiness.com. Bill will weigh in on some thoughts for prospective employees and considerations that their prospective employer are making. In other words, he is an executive, great entrepreneur and great theologian and Bible scholar, I regard him as. But he's owned and operated lots of different businesses, and he's been the guy that has hired, and he's been the guy that has fired. And he knows what the hiring process is like from the vantage point of the employer. Those of us who are searching for jobs, seeking jobs, or maybe just hoping for something different to come along in terms of a work opportunity, I think Bill English can provide a lot of perspective here. It's difficult when you're struggling to find adequate work and you're hoping for the job opportunity to be offered to you, and it's easy to get frustrated and angry at the prospective employers who don't call back or don't move as quickly as we'd like them to. But on the other side of the aisle, the employer, the company or the organization that employs people, they've got their own perspective. Bill English will bring that to us coming up tomorrow on our program. He is a regular weekly guest, typically on Wednesdays. Bill English, publisher of BibleAndBusiness.com. Also, Brad Wilcox, a professor in the state of Virginia. He also heads up the National Marriage Project. He's uncovered some very interesting new research data showing the social benefits to traditional marriage when, in fact, a marriage can be held together and can remain stable. It's easier said than done, and that's not to disparage anybody who ends up split up or divorced, but he also has uncovered some new enlightening data as it pertains to remarriage and bringing blended families together. So Brad Wilcox from the National Marriage Project will be with us tomorrow morning as well. Plus, we will continue analyzing this ongoing debate in our nation over religious liberty and the rights of lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered persons. This, as I said, this tension is reaching a boiling point. Fortunately, it's not resulting in civil unrest or violence. That's not the kind of boiling point I'm talking about, but it is getting to be very difficult for Christian men and women to own and operate their businesses and to do so safely and legally. But we'll talk more about that coming up tomorrow. I'll see you tomorrow morning at 6. Have a great day, and keep it right here on the Faith Radio Network. Thanks for listening to this podcast from Austin Hill in the Morning. For more information about this, you can visit Austin Hill in the Morning, our program page, on myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com.